primary Sunday school class invited the pastor down to see their Christmas artwork, and he observed on the bulletin board what you would expect to see at Christmas time. There was a picture of Mary and Joseph at the creche, at the manger. There was a picture of angels singing to the shepherds out in the field. There were pictures of wise men bringing gifts to the Christ child. And then there was a picture that he couldn't quite figure out. There was a jet plane there, and Mary and Joseph and the babe were boarding it, and the pilot was already in the cockpit. And the pastor said, "I don't quite understand this particular picture." And the little kid who drew it stood up and says, "Well, that's Mary and Joseph and the babe on their flight to Egypt." "Then who is the guy that's flying the plane?" asked the pastor. And the kid put out, says, "Don't you know that's Pontius the pilot who is taking them there?" Well, we catch up with Mary and Joseph today and the Holy Family on the run. If not in an airplane, then by any transportation they can possibly find. For in reality, they're on the run from Herod. They had to get out of Bethlehem in the middle of the night, for the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph and said, "Get up, take your child and his mother and escape to Egypt." Christ our Redeemer has now become Christ the refugee. And as I read that story, I thought about those words written so long ago. All men must learn before they die what they are running from and to and why. All men must learn before they die what they are running from and to and why. That's where I want to land on this first day of the year. Running from evil. Mary and Joseph and the child were running from evil. Did you hear the story about the woman who bought an extremely expensive dress, and when she showed it to her husband that night, he said, why in the world would you spend this much money on a dress? And she responded by saying, "The devil made me do it." And then he said, "Well, why didn't you say, 'Get thee behind me, Satan'?" And she said, "I did, but he said it looked good from that side too, so I immediately bought the thing and paid for it." If the devil were a joke, we could laugh our way into a new year. But evil is not a laughing matter. King Herod, immediately upon his throne, had all the Sanhedrin slaughtered, the Supreme Court of his day. He then proceeded to murder his wife and his mother-in-law and three of his sons. The saying was, it was safer to be a pig in King Herod's time than it was to be his son. Like the white witch in the line, the witch in the wardrobe, Herod is threatened by the presence of a child. And so he orders what we know in the biblical story as the massacre of the innocents, the murder of every male child in the 2 years old and younger in the vicinity of Bethlehem. The Christmas story is not just about love and joy and peace. It's about hate and bitterness and the wails of mothers like Rachel of old, who would not be comforted when her people were sent off to captivity. Sometimes the best thing we can do face to face with evil is to run, to escape, to get away, to do our best to get distance between what is happening and the hope of safety. Like New Yorkers running from the Twin Towers, like residents of the Gulf Coast running from Hurricane Katrina. Sometimes the best thing we can do is run to safety, get away from the evil one, temptation is bound to knock on your door this year. But you will decide whether or not you answer the doorbell and let it in. Run, man. Run. Sometimes it's the best approach to life. Get away from that which would do us in, running from evil. In the second place, the Holy Family were running into a detour. Verse 14, so they left Egypt and stayed there until the death of Herod. Have you ever been to Egypt? I was there one time 3 days, and it was 2 days too long for me. I was happy to see the pyramids and the Sphinx, and that took about 2 hours, and then I was ready to get out of there. I paid to get on a camel and then had to pay a lot more to get off the camel. The dirt and the poverty seemed more than I could manage. I have a new appreciation for this part of the text that says, out of Egypt I will call my son. I was glad to be called out of Egypt. For Mary and Joseph, Egypt was not a pleasant place either, you know. Had awful memory in their history. Was a place of slavery for their ancestors. Was a place where the people gone before them had to make brick without any straw. It was a place where they were whipped for no reason at all. Who on earth would go to Nazareth from Jerusalem by way of Egypt? Life is filled with detours. So that is a fact of life. Life is filled with detours. Our dreams, our hopes, our fantasies have a way of slamming into a brick wall. And we are left to find a way over or under or around or out, some other alternative to the challenges of life. My old professor Wayne Oates in pastoral care wrote a book on life's detours. And in it he said there are some principles we ought to use in dealing with the detours of our lives. In the first place, we ought to practice the principle of realism. Life just gives us the facts. It's not concerned about feeling. It's not concerned about interpretation. Life just delivers you what is. And while shock may insulate us for a little while and fantasy may help us escape for a weekend, we have to live in the realities of life. It's like the person in a hurry driving down the road who saw the big sign on the edge of the road, says bridge out 3 miles ahead, but he was in a hurry and so he just bailed right past it, and 3 miles down the road, there was a huge barricade across the road with a sign on it that said, I told you the bridge was out. And so there are bridges that are washed away in our lives. Detours are a fact of life. The quicker we own that, the better we'll be. Then my friend Wayne Oates says, there is also the principle of compensation, that the body is so built that when it loses one part, the other parts compensate. When you lose one kidney, the other kidney works harder. When you lose your eyesight, your hearing becomes much more sensitive than it ever was before. My daughter-in-law's father has been blind for years. He's been a longtime friend of mine, and my daughter-in-law was telling me over Christmas, and my sister and I were in the other room talking about our dad, and all at once he said, I don't know if y'all realize it or not, but I can hear every word you're saying because I can hear that well. So you may want to change the subject. Such is the case with compensation. When one part of our body goes, another moves in to take its place. And Wayne Oates says you ought to remember that on life's detours. There'll be ways to find your way through the places you don't want to be. There's the principle of perspective, he said. Remember that no trouble enjoys everlasting life. Remember that this too will pass. Remember that sometimes all we have to do is to endure the moment and hope for the future. Remember, said Wayne Oates, the principle of resurrection. A grain must fall into the ground and die before it springs forth to new life. So the old life of ours must be cast aside before a new life can spring forth. Pray for redemption and resurrection in the midst of the detours of your life. And one more principle he gave, and that is the principle of fellowship. Don't ever go through your detours alone. Take friends with you. Take a community of faith with you. And most of all, remember, God is in Egypt. God is in Egypt, and He will see us through. Run. Run through the detours of your life. Until you come out on the other side. Run. Run by the purposes of God, according to the will of God. There's a phrase in this little story I don't think I've ever quite caught before. He's always quoting the Old Testament. Always setting up the story in the context of the bigger picture of God's working in the world. And so was fulfilled what was said by the prophets. He will come out of Egypt and he will be called a Nazarene. Never mind that the scholars can't quite find the references. The author saw it all as a part of God's plan, universal plan for the world. There's a verse in Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah, that I find helpful for life. It's Jeremiah 29:12. And this is what it says. For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. You can build your life on that. God has purpose and meaning and a plan for you. Let us run with the will of God. About 100 years ago, a lawyer by the name of Max Ehrman wrote a creed at the beginning of a year, a creed he called a creed for life. He talked about going quietly into a new year. He talked about living on good terms with people as best you can and to speak the truth and listen to people, all kinds of people, because they bring wisdom. And then he said this, you're a child of the universe. No less than the trees and the star, you have a reason to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Yes, life is filled with detours, but God is bigger than the detours of our day. So I go into a new year with a simple little prayer. Lead me, Lord. I will follow. Lead me, Lord. I will go. You have called me. I will answer. Lead me, Lord. I will go.